Hello everyone and welcome to the next edition of the VTX podcast. Here at the Veterinary Thought Exchange, we like to start by asking, what are you thinking? And this week we're going to be thinking and chatting with the incredible Sean. Sean, honestly, what a joy to have Sean on the podcast. What an amazing career that he has had in the veterinary profession. He chats about the challenges that he's had navigating our amazing profession and how he's really forged his own way with the brilliant work that he does, not only his veterinary work, but also with conservation. And we did promise him that we wouldn't talk too much about the beavers, but we did have to mention them a little bit, Karen, didn't we?
We did.
And you will have to listen to understand the context of all of that. Not only do we talk about beavers, we talk about David Attenborough, Lorraine Kelly, just so many great mentions on the podcast today. So just an absolute joy to chat to Sean, and I'm really, really excited for you to hear this conversation. We are also having a discussion with Sean on our clinical segment, Just a Thought, about raw feeding in dogs and cats. So do make sure to tune into the next episode to hear that conversation, which also was massively enlightening and brilliant. So it's just been such a joy to chat to Sean about all of these things. Okay, well, Sean, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. We're really thrilled that you're here. I just wonder whether we can just start by you maybe just briefly introducing yourself to the listeners, and I suppose maybe just a little bit about your veterinary beginnings, if that's okay.
Sure, yeah. So my name's Sean McCormack, and I'm a qualified vet. I've had a bit of a squiggly career, as some would say. I also work as a wildlife conservationist and occasionally do a bit of media presenting as well. But my beginning, I suppose, was probably like many of your listeners, just really obsessed with the natural world, not just animals or domestic pets and things like that, but really kind of like nature in all its forms, bugs and birds and, you know, slimy things and creepy crawlies. I was just really an outdoors kid and not into like technology or computer games. I mean, it's just if I could be outdoors and if I could be exploring, you know, the woods or turning over logs and seeing what was underneath, that's what I was into. So I think the veterinary side of things, or the idea to become a vet, kind of crept in with adults in my life, kind of seeing how passionate I was about nature and asking what I wanted to be when I grew up. And my default answer at that time was, what are the animal jobs I know of? I want to be a zookeeper or a vet. Long story short, and after an undergrad degree and then graduate entry in vet school, I became a zoo vet. And that was the start of my career. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's cool. I think it's funny. I vividly remember as quite a young child, that kind of gateway into veterinary medicine for a lot of us, I think, is, you know, is just the natural world. And actually, I remember, you know, being bought this set of conservation books, or like, you know, and being really just obsessed with wildlife shows and that sort of thing, you know. Yeah. And actually, you know, that was more how it started, you know what I mean? Like that kind of, and actually the irony is I can't even watch wildlife shows nowadays because I think they're too sad when things die. I can't cope with that at all. Yeah. At all, you know, like that's just a game changer. Anyway, so how do you, like, I suppose you know, you've found your way to vet school. When you kind of made that decision to go to vet school, what was your idea of what your veterinary career would look like at that stage? What did you think it was going to be?
Definitely not what it is now.
Yes.
I if I had spoken to, I don't know, 16-year-old Sean and said, you know, you're going to be doing this and this in a strange portfolio career, some of which is vet related, some not, you know, I would have thought, how did that happen? And I think that's a good thing to keep your mind open. But yeah, I thought that just being a vet was what I had observed in my own, you know, hometown in Ireland, seeing practice with my local vet, who was, you know, the dog and cat vet of the town, and in a clinical setting, you know, seeing people's pets, basically. I thought that was kind of it, or else being a farm vet, you know, driving around the countryside. But I guess I got a fairly rounded like education doing animal science. There was a lot of habitat and species conservation topics in there, and anatomy and physiology and comparative anatomy of like a wide variety of species. So I kind of got a bit of an itch that, you know what, zoology and the natural world is the thing that really kind of floats my boat. But I had kind of been set on this self-made path, I suppose, a stubborn path in a way. I didn't get into vet school straight away with my leaving certificate, which is the equivalent of A levels in the UK. And there's only one vet school in Ireland, in Dublin, and it's super, super competitive to get into, more so than here. So I didn't get in. So I went the long way around, moved to the UK age 18 to do an animal science degree rather than the straight up science degree I was offered in Trinity in Dublin, because I wanted to do a degree that wasn't available in Ireland and would be more kind of tailored towards the vet program. And I think that was a good thing for me and for my later career, because it gave me a grounding in a broader base of knowledge, really. And when I went into vet school then, as you know, a 23-year-old, I suppose, rather than 18-year-old, I just had a broader sense of like what you could do career-wise and how veterinary medicine maybe fit into a wider picture about the planet and ecology and nature in general. And I think having qualified and gone into the standard kind of clinical practice, yes, my first practice had zoos on the books and that was great, but hard to forge a career there, you know, without maybe some financial backing behind you, because there's not a lot of money or living to be made as a zoo vet. And I did 6 years of normal clinical practice, treating domestic and exotic pets and occasional kind of zoo work. And I got quite burned out by it. And I think the fundamental factor was that I was sort of firefighting domestic pet scenarios that many of them I kind of was getting uncomfortable with or didn't particularly agree with. And certainly in the exotic pet side of things, I got particularly jaded with that, whereas I went in all passionate and I knew a lot more than many of my classmates, for example, about exotic animals. But I started to realize that I'm just firefighting poor husbandry, poor nutrition, and maybe some of these animals shouldn't be in captivity, certainly shouldn't be in captivity as pets. So got a bit jaded and burnt out and took a bit of time and realized that actually my true passion was, again, being outdoors and doing things for kind of nature and bigger picture rather than just being stuck in a windowless consultation room for the rest of my career until I can retire. So a bit of a difficult journey, but one that has really paid off. And now I have quite a varied kind of workload as a freelance vet. And I feel way more fulfilled than I ever did. And I'm way happier than I was in clinical practice.
I kind of love and also not the that description of that kind of windowless consulting room. But actually, do you know, but it's kind of, I don't know, that's maybe like a symbolic for so many different things in the veterinary profession, but there is that kind of really feeling, I think, for a lot of people, maybe at that kind of 4, 5, 6 year mark, you know, where everyone seems to evaporate, you
I
know.
do.
Like everyone, where does everyone go? I don't know. Everyone disappears.
Yeah.
But I think it's more than just, you know, there's so many things I think that contribute to how vets or and veterinary professionals are feeling at that kind of, you know, stage. And did it ever cross your mind that maybe this wasn't for you? Like you'd made, you know, it wasn't necessarily something that was maybe the right career for you. Did that ever cross your mind?
It did cross my mind. And that's a really difficult and confronting thing, isn't it? Because, you know, with the veterinary degree and how difficult it is to get into it and how difficult it is to stick with it and pass and become a vet, you know, you have poured in a lot of your heart and soul and blood, sweat and tears into getting that degree. And then to say, maybe this isn't something I want to do. It felt like not only am I potentially letting myself down, but am I letting my parents down? Am I letting all my friends and family and support network over all the years down? You know, that's a difficult thing. And I think we're very good at hiding or pushing down those feelings sometimes and just cracking on with it. Vets are, you know, a stoic bunch, and we do deal with ups and downs and, you know, emotional highs and lows in our work. But what happened for me, I guess the kind of, trigger for me to say this is not going to go well if I continue on this path was I was having stomach problems, and I went to my doctor with stomach problems, and he started questioning me, and we had a lot in common, obviously being clinicians, and he talked about clients and how was work going and what was the story at work and how was I feeling about it, and had I had any run-ins with clients lately? And I just started crying in the GP's office, and he was like, this is not your stomach, this is your mind, this is you not coping with stress, and it's just exacerbating your stomach problems. So that was a light bulb moment. And luckily I had, a very supportive boss and practice manager, and I went to them pretty much straight away because he signed me off for 2 weeks. And they knew I wasn't particularly happy. There was other factors at the same time in terms of practice buy-in and partnership and other discussions going on that kind of contributed as well in the previous year. But they said, we'll support you, and you're gonna have to figure this out, and there's a job here for you if you want it, but if you do want to leave, let's talk about terms. And I was lucky, I suppose, in a way that I also consulted VetLife, and they put me in touch with a career counselor and opened up my mind that actually being a vet was not just this one option in a consultation room, forevermore. There was lots and lots of things that vets can do with their degree, with their vocation, because it is, to many a vocation, and your identity is wrapped up in it. And I just took some time, and I went back to my previous career in a way, garden design. I was a garden designer during vet school to pay my beer money as a student.
Oh, what? That's
Yeah, I know,
crazy. That's
bit of a curveball. Yeah, but like I worked in a garden center from the time I was 14 or something as a weekend job, and I
Right.
always describe it as I'm into flora and fauna. Like, I don't see the distinction really between like plants and animals. It's all related.
Oh, I love that. Okay.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
I said, you know what, I've got this alternative career that I can take a break from vetting and still earn some money. So I restarted the garden design business that I had in Dublin as a vet student, and I did a few gardens that summer, and I just had that breathing space to be outdoors, to be creative, to, create these beautiful natural spaces, all designed with wildlife in mind. And just nature was a real tonic and a therapy for me to kind of take that step back and see the bigger picture and go, I'm still a vet and I can do lots of things with my vet degree. Let's start exploring them now,
And I think that, but it's, I think that probably, not only is the veterinary thing very wrapped up in our identity, our personality, I don't know, everything, and the problem is, I think you take it away and actually a lot of veterinary professionals will feel like they don't have anything. And I think I would kind of relate to that a little bit where, I mean, obviously I've got my family and children, all that kind of stuff, like things, people, but what else do I do? Not a huge amount, like some take the dog for a walk. I certainly don't design gardens, but I think the problem is you're kind of, you take the veterinary thing away, and what I'm meaning is a lot of people are left with like, well, what is it other thing that I do? So I suppose that it's great that there's, and I think we need to kind of make sure that we've got other things, because that's also really important, and also the reality that, we can go back to, I could go back to university now if I wanted and do a evening course in something, or like, it's not, we're not unidimensional in that way, and I think that's so important to kind of remember that, really, isn't it? That there's more to it. So you, I think, but have you having that ability to have that kind of breathing space, it sounded obviously really important for you. So where, what's the process of kind of forging then how your career looks? Do you sit down, who do you sit down with and sort of say, right, how am I going to piece this together? How am I going to make this my version of veterinary medicine that kind of works for me? How did you work it out?
Yeah, good question. Just going back on your previous point, just very briefly, I think there's some work to be done in like the university level and the entry level, and certainly with vet students. I think the 5 years I had on my classmates coming in straight out of their, A-level equivalent gave me a lot of perspective that they didn't have. And I remember saying to many of them, like, you are eating, breathing, living, sleeping veterinary medicine with other vet students, sharing houses, and all you talk about, all you do is vet. And I think that is very unhealthy. And I think the universities need to do a better job. I don't know, it's a demanding degree and it's demanding on your time, But I do think that the universities need to do a better job at encouraging people to pursue other interests and maintain other interests and maintain other friends and groups of people, because we can become so insular as a profession and almost see ourselves as completely separate to the general public that we deal with,
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Isn't it funny? Like, really, a complete, like, we just should all live in a commune together.
Yeah,
No,
it's like this
don't.
weird bubble, that we all meet up twice a year at a vet conference and talk about our jobs, and then we go back to our windowless rooms and
Oh
keep
my
vetting,
God. Oh my God. Yeah. Let's
But
not
sorry,
toot
your point, yeah.
the sorry.
I'm going off on tangents.
No, that's funny though, but that's true. You've just really summed that up so well.
Yeah.
So, well, let's catch up at London Vet Show and then let's just live in this room with no
Yes.
windows and then I'll see you again in a year. Okay,
A
great. It's going to
year's
be
time,
great. And the reason London Vet Show is so great is because everyone's overexcited about daylight. You know what I mean? Like, it's just.
They've got their annual quota to vitamin D, yeah.
God.
Um,
Yeah, so what do you so hopefully you're forging your veterinary career in a windowed room or even sitting outside. So where did you work out? What
yeah.
were you going to do next?
Yeah, so there was options open to me. I'd studied animal science. I'd worked for a year between my degree and going into the graduate entry program in Dublin on vet school, with animals in research, looking at welfare with animals in research. And
All
I
right.
sort of kind of pulled that thread and said, "Is that something I'd like to go back into?" Because I'm very passionate about animal welfare and animal welfare science and evidence-based kind of welfare and ethics. And I thought, that is not a good idea, Sean, because you're not going to be dealing with all, roses and rainbows, in animals in research. There's quite a lot of emotional tug and turmoil there. And then my other, I was thinking, what are my strengths and what are my interests? And my other interests all along the way, across species, over the 2 degrees, was nutrition. I was quite interested in nutrition. I was certainly interested in nutrition as a zoo vet and as an exotics vet, because a lot of our diseases of captivity are related to captive nutrition. So I had an interest and a background, and was well able for the kind of biochemistry side of things and stuff like that. So I guess what I did was I went and spoke to a couple of recruiters, and I found a recruiter that was quite niche and specialist in the veterinary sector, but also had experience placing vets. And this maybe came through vet life, I'm not sure, but had experience placing vets who found themselves, in that position of, I don't want to do clinical practice full time forevermore. What else can I do? And to his credit, had a great recruiter, and he listened to me and what made me tick, and he said, "Leave it with me, and I will see what's coming up." And I had the luxury of time because I was doing other things. And he contacted me. I said that I didn't really want to go into a massive global corporation nutrition brand and just be one little vet, in an office doing not much, or just not making much of a difference. And he got in touch then, and he talked to me about a new pet startup that was doing something very clever with technology and a new model, a new way of feeding animals and bespoke diets. And it was a tech company, basically, doing pet nutrition on an individual basis. So it was tails.com. And I thought, when he mentioned this first, okay, this is one of two things. It's either a really, really bougie product for very, affluent owners to design diets for their dogs and pampered pooch kind of veal, or it's what they're saying it is, but it's not. It couldn't be as tailored as they say. How could they do that? They wouldn't be able to design individual diets. And I went in and I met the CEO, and he sort of pitched to me, and he said, "This is quite interesting, actually." He said, "We're not looking for a vet. We want a vet that has business acumen and entrepreneurial skills. And we loved your CV and the fact that you have a garden design business and the fact that you've done all this during vet school and that you are involved in conservation as well. And you obviously can spin a lot of plates." And that was the thing he was interested in. And he pitched the idea to me, and I saw that there was very clever people behind this new way of designing pet food. And I thought, you know what? I had an offer on the table for a maternity cover animals in research position for 9 months, and I'd accepted it. And I had walked out of the little tiny office of tails.com when there were 30 people above a Holland and Barrett. And I rang my dad, and I was like, "Oh, I don't know what to do. I actually have just had an incredible meeting. It's high risk. I don't know what a head vet in a pet food company does, but they want me to come in and do that and be a product manager in an interim role until they scaled up and could hire someone else in the product team. And I was like, I'm really tempted to just go for this and give it a go. And my dad said, look, as long as you're not, banking on it being a success, lots of startups fail, give it a try. Maybe it's more security than the 9 month position. So I rang them and I said, I'm very, very sorry. I'm going to have to withdraw my acceptance and I've got another offer. And I started with Tails.com and that's over 9 years ago now. And
Oh,
I
wow. Yeah.
absolutely love it. We've grown like pretty massive. It is extremely clever technology, extremely talented people. There are windows in the
Windows,
offices.
do they? Now
And
that's good, isn't it? Well done. They've
there
really
are
made
dogs.
it.
There are
Yeah.
dogs that are not sick and are just pure
Oh.
joy all the time in the office. And yeah, it's been a fantastic role for me. And it's allowed me a lot of flexibility. I'm freelance now, but I'm on a retainer contract as a head vet. And I have time then to do lots of other things
Oh,
that
your other things, yeah.
are passion projects and maybe don't pay the bills as much. But I've got that flex and I've got that
Oh, that's
freedom.
great. Oh, I love that. That's so cool. And I mean, I don't mean to. I do have to just ask you one thing about that Tails position, because for me, the best thing about that is that you got to meet Lorraine Kelly. So
Oh, me and Lorraine are best buds now,
I know you
yeah.
are, and I'm so jealous.
I love Lorraine, she's great.
Do you know, I've got a list of things to ask you here, and the top thing is just Lorraine Kelly.
Yeah. I've been to her house for tea many's a time.
Have you?
I
Oh
have,
my
yeah.
God, that
She's great.
literally, those are my life goals. I don't really want anything else other than to be her friend. No. Anyway, that's very cool. And actually, one of the things we had we were speaking to someone else, another vet on the podcast who also has, does some media work, and I was asking them about meeting Claire Balding, who also I love. But I suppose my question to you, please don't ruin my absolute sort of picture perfect thing. Is Lorraine as nice as she seems to be on television?
She's nicer.
Oh,
For anyone wondering, by the way, Lorraine was
love
a brand ambassador for Tails.com, and that's where that working
Yeah.
relationship came from. And then we
Yeah.
hit it off, and yeah, she's
I
good
love
crack.
that. Oh, I
She's
love
brilliant.
that. Yeah, my actually just sorry, just really quick. I was once or when I very, very first started the podcast with Karen during lockdown, my mum listened to the first episode and she actually said to me, she said, "Yeah, you do come across well. You do sound like a really camp Lorraine Kelly." So that was what she
I
said.
don't think that's a bad thing.
I know, I'm okay. I've embraced that. No, I'm totally fine with that. So anyway, that's what she thought I sounded like on the
Great.
podcast. So there you go. That's a nice story, and there's windows, which is great. So, and do you feel better? Do you feel that your career makes or gives you the space to feel better in yourself, unlike that time maybe where that was not the case?
Yeah, look, I was very aware, and this again goes back to my, village vet in outside Dublin where I grew up, and he said to me, "You're very determined to do this, but you do need to realize certain things about the job, and the day-to-day job is difficult, and you'll deal with this and you'll deal with that, and it's not what everyone thinks it is." And so he gave me fair warning, and he also told me about like briefly kind of mental health issues in the profession. So I am very much tuned in to that. I went through a period in my teenage years where things weren't great. I'm gay and I grew up in Catholic Ireland in an all boys school, and that wasn't an easy environment to grow up in. So I was all and I was in the closet with my own feelings for quite a long time. And that gave me a sense of, my happiness, my well-being, and what I needed to do to manage it. So I was very dialed into that. And what was happening in, the later years of clinical practice is I was getting resentful about the work. I was getting resentful about clients potentially, and just the emotional drain that you have every day in the current model, or the model then of a vet in practice. But I knew, I was like, I know just what this profession, has in terms of statistics on this. And I know that if I don't get proactive or look after myself or speak to people about this, things are only going to go one way, and I don't want to be at that statistic when I'm 40 or 50 or whatever down the line. So I could see the direction of travel, and I was very aware, self-aware. So that helped me to say, I'm not okay. I need some help. Going to the GP office, talking to VetLife, going to a counselor, taking some time to get outside and touch grass and feel the sun, and really just have some time to work out what was important to me. So yeah, that was something that maybe some people don't do very well or are frightened to jump off the edge a little bit. But I would always say to them that, yeah, there's lots more that you can do with your vet degree, and you're not throwing in the towel if you're throwing in, a clinical role or whatever. We only live, on this planet for a very short time, and there's no sense whatsoever in being miserable. But I appreciate also it's very hard to make those decisions, and it's very easy for me to talk about them now, what, 9 years later, 10 years later.
And I think that's the thing, I find, because I have lots of things that I can tell people too now and saying, well, over these last 20 years, let me tell you all the things that I did wrong, and maybe, now I've got it sorted, which is not even true. But, I think even from the perspective of, I have a very clear boundary now. So I do still do clinical work, but I only do 3 days a week, and I will never, ever, ever do more than that.
That's a
Ever,
nice
never, ever.
balance.
Never, ever. But that's just I just know that if I, do more than that, it just the wheels fall off and it just doesn't work. So I
Yeah.
think, it's just about understanding whether you're consult only or just doing surgery or doing this on this date. I think we've got to be, just willing to sort of create this thing that works for us, and that is fine. And it doesn't have to look like what you thought it was, right? And it can be different from that for sure,
Yeah.
and that's okay, that's okay.
And the industry needs to recognize that as well, that I think many of the problems that vets have within their, vocation, profession, whatever, job, is that there's a priority towards, client first and maybe team or business or profit sometimes, depending on what you're looking at. And vet welfare actually often comes fairly far down the list. It's a grueling job if you're doing it full time and on call and everything. And,
Crazy.
you know, yeah.
I mean, it really, really, truly is. That's the reality. And I can't, but I mean, I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because it's, you are reflecting on, I'm reflecting on all the things that I did wrong, but it's okay. I feel okay about it. But I think important that we kind of talk about maybe the things that could be better and certainly, move away from that attitude that just because I had it hard, then everyone else has to have it hard as they graduate. And I think we are moving away from that. I think
Yeah.
we have to do it sort of differently. I think that, one of the things that people will see, if they kind of follow you on social media, not only do I absolutely love watching you stand on your balcony and surround almost like Snow White surrounded by birds, but or Mary Poppins or whatever.
I'll take either.
Either is good, right? Yeah,
Yeah,
either is
yeah.
good. Either is strong. As far as kind of that conservation stuff that you do now, and I'm saying conservation, I clearly I don't really understand. So I think all I had written down on my list of things to ask you is don't mention the beavers, but I think. Right?
I'm surprised it's taken this long.
Right, I was going to leave it as the last question. What about those beavers? Tell me about them.
Yeah.
But the tell me so but just give us an idea really of what the conservation piece means for you, because I see you doing things on allotments and out in nature and doing like, oh, it's all very cool, but give us an idea of what that really is. How is that a job? Is that a job?
It's occasionally a job. More
Okay.
often it's a voluntary effort.
Yeah.
I was kind of involved in conservation here and there, during my studies. I did a bit of volunteering, for local conservation groups, and My dad is quite interested in birds, so that's where the kind of bird knowledge came from when I was a kid. And we were members, the two of us were members of Birdwatch Ireland. And I was reading their, monthly or quarterly magazine about like hands-on conservation efforts to save rare species and things. I just thought, that's a cool career. I wonder if I could, ever get into that. And obviously zoos then have a lot of impact, good zoos at least, a lot of impact in kind of ex situ conservation programs around the world. So it was always something I was dialed into. And when I was having my little career break and wondering what to do next, for the very first time, I actually started exploring Ealing, where I lived. And I'd lived in Ealing for, say, 5 years, and just hadn't had the time because I was constantly tired and overworked and whatever. But I won a camera. I won an Amazon voucher in Vet Times for 250 quid. And at that time, that's, a significant amount of money. I said, what would I buy with that free money that I might feel guilty about buying for myself? And it was a camera. So I got out with the camera and started snapping photos and then exploring Ealing and going, wow, there's so much green space here in Ealing. It's zone 3 and 4 of London, but it's a very green borough. It's got a Brent River Park running through the whole borough as this green spine. And there was incredible wildlife. And long story short, I set up kind of by accident from a conversation on another Facebook group, set up Ealing Wildlife Group to run a few bat walks, bring people out, with a bat detector and show them what bats were around. That's where it started. And it's just grown and snowballed into something much, much bigger. Again, none of this by design, just all organic kind of growth. It's now a constituted community group and we operate on the kind of three C's ethos. So it's community, conservation, collaboration. So it's really bringing people in and putting them at the heart of kind of nature conservation in the borough. So we do lots of traditional conservation work like habitat management, and we work alongside the council rangers and are all, volunteers. And then we've recently, more recently, got into kind of more rewilding and being a bit bigger picture about green space management and allowing nature to thrive and reintroduction of species. So we started with Britain's smallest rodent, the harvest mouse, and we now have released Britain's largest native rodent, the beaver, which you've alluded to. So this has all just happened, yeah, kind of organically. I do a little bit of consultation work now in conservation, and we get a little bit of grant funding sometimes to cover some hours on facilitating, education events and things. But largely, it is the second full-time job that doesn't pay the bills, but it connects me to my community. It has grown, a village around me, which I'm a big advocate for. Wherever you live in the world, you need to build your village and get connected. And it also gives me a lot of joy to see, the reap the rewards of our work. Like, we've got peregrine falcons on the hospital now with three chicks that everyone around the world is watching on a webcam and rooting for. And we've got beavers and harvest mice and Swift Project, Hedgehog Project, Great Crested Newts, all sorts. So yeah, for a nature geek boy grown into a man that's now like kind of spearheading all these cool conservation projects in an urban area and connecting people with nature, it's like a dream come true, really.
How
Wow.
cool is that,
Love
Karen?
that.
Isn't that cool? So just that wait, just remind me where the beavers are. Where do they live?
The beavers are in a place called Paradise Fields in Greenford in Ealing. Yeah. So
So
it's
they're
the
in
only,
Ealing.
they're in Ealing. And we're not the first, technically not the first beaver reintroduction in London, because there is one in Enfield on the outskirts in a kind of very rural setting.
Who cares about
But we
them? Who
say,
cares about them? They're the we're
but is it,
Team Ealing.
this is proper like urban beaver reintroduction and it's publicly accessible. So part of the Capital Ring route around London runs through the beaver enclosure. So people can see a beaver wetland emerging over time, see what's happening there. So it's been really transformative and quite pioneering and quite difficult to get across the line, but we got it and we got Mayor of London support and funding and all sorts. So yeah, it's been
That's so cool.
it is cool.
So did Boris support the
It
beaver?
was Sadiq Khan.
That's a catchphrase. Sadiq, okay, good. Boris's beavers would have been cool though. I think but the what so hold on. So can these beavers wander about? can they wander
And
about?
they're not totally free. So it's a kind of semi-wild or semi-captive population, depending how you look at it. So the
Okay.
only way up until about 2 months ago, the only way you could reintroduce beavers in England was with a licensed enclosure trial. So that's what we're doing in the urban
Okay.
context. We said to Natural England, we want to study what
Wow.
beavers do on an urban river catchment and how to mitigate some of their
Wow.
effects with urban infrastructure. And actually, one of the primary goals of the project was to
Wow.
show that beavers could be a nature-based solution for urban flood mitigation. And they've already demonstrated that they've
Oh.
alleviated flooding downstream.
Wow. That is so cool. I'm sorry we had to talk about it, but I really
No,
couldn't.
it's good.
I
It's
couldn't
good.
because it's so, I mean, I couldn't know. So it's very cool.
Beavers have taken over my life, so
Yeah,
it's
that, yeah, you, there's money to be made there in merchandise, I feel. So we can maybe talk about that later. No, I'm joking. Really cool. That's really cool. So that I think there's so much about that. So you will have, without doubt, inspired so many people. You know, not with just so with so many things that you do, you've inspired so many people. I wonder if you could share with us who inspires you.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the big man himself is Sir David Attenborough.
Oh.
I think all my childhood was glued to the screen, and his voice is so iconic, and how he's managed to engage people with nature over his long and industrious career is absolutely phenomenal. So he would be an absolute hero of mine in that respect.
Love that.
Jane Goodall as well, I think the work she does, and specifically the work she's doing now in terms
Yeah.
of kind of empowering people and bringing, talking about the importance of bringing Indigenous communities into, climate change conversations, and those kind of communities being the worst affected by what we're doing in kind of Western society. She's a big hero. Yeah.
Well, I when you said the big man, I thought you were going to say Jesus. And I was like, oh
Oh
my God, is
God,
I was like, is
no.
this going to, is this, this is not going in the direction I
I'm a
thought.
lapsed Catholic.
All right, okay. I literally had the big man, Jesus Christ. No, so David Attenborough's
No,
great.
Big Dave, Big
Big
Dave.
Dave. And I obviously, it was his 99th birthday, wasn't it? And he
Just
actually,
last week,
yeah,
yeah.
that, and actually, it's very emotional watching him speak. Like, I think now, and he can, you know, as he was talking about, as I'm going to start crying now, but when he was talking about, you know, coming to the end of his life and, you know,
Yeah.
just that reflection, so powerful. Like, I found that so powerful. So yeah,
Yeah.
that's a great one. You've spoken about kind of, you know, that obviously this career has had, you know, a number of challenges for you. I wonder, you know, if you were able to send some, you know, send a message to younger veterinary professionals, maybe thinking about those reflections and things that you would that you've learned along the way. What advice would you give to those people listening, or just any veterinary professional? What do you think, what lesson that you've learned would you share with them?
I think it's about pressure. We're great at applying a really critical eye, self-critical eye, on what we do, what we should be doing, and putting ourselves under a lot of pressure to like perform. And part of that is, how we were recruited into the profession or how we entered the profession. We had to be top of our game academically and get the highest grades and push ourselves, sustainedly for a long, long time to get through. So I would offer the advice that don't put yourself under so much pressure or self-scrutiny when you come out into practice. And part of that, or run on from that, is to keep a really open mind that if you're doing something now that seems to be the right thing or the done thing or the thing you should do, just keep an open mind that that might change, and your version of fulfillment and happiness isn't always going to be tied up in that job that you dreamed of when you were younger. That picture of the job you were dreamed of when you're younger, there's a lot of opportunity out there for veterinary professionals to do other things, and still not lose that sense of pride of what you achieved or that sense of vocation for, the profession you're in. And I think being a vet is an incredible gateway. You know, my friend Ebony from Vetstego Diversify talks about the vet passport and it being one of the best passports in the world in terms of career. We have so many transferable skills that we can bring to the table across different industries, the charity sector, research, government. You know, there's loads and loads of things you can do. So I would say that don't put yourself under so much pressure to fulfill the idea that you had all along. Keep an open mind that other opportunities might come your way, and it can be fun to explore them. And you don't have to get it right if you do explore them. There's no harm in coming back and going, that didn't work. And also just be aware that, you know, if you are unhappy, again, life is short, and we shouldn't accept being miserable. And talk to people, talk to your friends, talk to your family, and just sound out, that situation, and keep an open mind that there's other things you can do.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's that, and yeah, life is short, right? And we don't, just because we spent a lot of time doing something doesn't mean we need to do it forever. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Just because you're like, oh my God, so many years, you know, and but it can be, it can change and it's okay. So finally, I suppose my question would be, what do you want to be when you grow up?
I talk about that all the time. It's like when I grow up, I would like to the dream right now, and it can change, year on year, but the dream right now would be to be comfortable in a career that was largely kind of nature and conservation based. I think the end goal dream, if you have to have a kind of physical thing to aspire to, I would love to be rewilding land on a bigger scale, and getting people involved and bringing people into a kind of a immersive nature type experience, and reconnecting people with nature in whatever form. So whether that's buying land and doing a rewilding project, or whether that's getting involved with something that's already happening, I don't know. But that's kind of the direction of travel, I think. Five, seven little beavers in a small enclosure in urban London isn't cutting the mustard anymore, you know?
Is it
I
not?
want to go bigger. I love them, but I want to go bigger scale, bigger impact.
I'm gonna come and see those beavers. I really, I think it's the coolest. Listen, that, well, I can't imagine how impressed we're gonna be with whatever the heck you're gonna do next. Because the beavers are, in my mind, pretty cool. I would have been happy with the little mice, whatever they, was it mice?
Harvest
Little field
mice.
mice,
Harvest
harbor
mice.
mice. I would have been happy with them. God, that's incredible.
We joke that the harvest mice are the perfect gateway drug to nature, because we bring the community in to the releases. So far we've released, I think, 2,600 mice across the borough. But we actually get them in people's hand and get them to release them into the wild,
Oh,
and
I love
it
that.
connects people with nature conservation in a way that digging hedges or ditches or clearing out ponds doesn't. You know, putting a small animal in back into the life in the wild is really, really great way to engage people.
But it's just the power of it that, I do get that. I think the power of nature, like we so we live in on Vancouver Island in Canada now, and we have this raccoon that visits our garden now. Now, I know loads of people don't even like them here. They're kind of a bit of a pest. They'll sometimes attack your dog. I've never been more obsessed with a thing. Like, it's just, it's this, I, what, there's something so powerful about just this raccoon sitting on my back porch. Do you know what I mean? I'm
I do. I lived
obsessed.
in Vancouver,
Did
and
you?
I did. I went to UBC for
All right.
a study semester. People call them trash pandas over there, don't they? But I was obsessed with them as well. It's like
Obsessed. Yeah.
seeing a wild animal,
Yeah.
on your doorstep, especially in urban areas. I think is just a really great way to reconnect with what's important, and that we're part of nature too, aren't we? So.
Well, listen, Sean, that was, yeah, what a, you're very cool. You're very cool. I just need you to know that. So, what a wonderful conversation. Thanks so much for chatting to us. It's been a real pleasure. So thank you for chatting to us today.
Thank you for having me on. It's been great. My not so cool teenage self thanks you for that comment. I wasn't cool in school, looking at
Oh,
bugs and birds
listen.
and
But look at you now, look at you now. You are very cool. So
things.
thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Sean for chatting today. Just such a wonderful conversation. Just thank you for his honesty and openness and brilliance and sharing just so many amazing insights and thoughts about his career and our profession. Please head over to the show notes for the episode to learn a little bit more about Sean, some of the things he's doing, and a little bit more about VTX and what we do. You can check us out at www.vtx-cpd.com, and please remember to join us next time for our Just a Thought episode, where we are chatting again with Sean about some of the pros and cons of raw feeding in our companion animals, particularly in our dogs and cats. So do please check that out. If you have any ideas, if you would like to hear chatting in the podcast, or any clinical segment ideas you would have, then please do let us know. Massive thank you to all of you again for listening. We really, really appreciate the support, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.